The Beautiful Game, a podcast from the Compass Network.
Welcome to this week's episode of The Beautiful Game. I'm Kyle West, your regular host, joined today by Dan Taylor and Pete Gaskell. This week we'll be covering the top games and some other subjects, some of which were suggested by you, our listeners. I want to talk to you guys first about referee accountability and whether or not we sort of need to start moving on to video referees. My first question is for you, Dan, just to start off very bluntly. Should referees have to speak to the cameras after games?
The referees have to put up with enough stick, I think, from the fans in the stadium to then be grueled by the media, who, you know, are never the most sympathetic of folk. I think it's a bit harsh, but then if it's part of the job, it's part of the job, I suppose.
The Wes Brown suspension has been overturned by the FA today.
Thankfully.
Yeah, we say thankfully, but what good is it now? I know Sunderland get their player for the next... They're not going to lose him for three games, which is great, because he's a good player. But you could argue that Sunderland lost crucial points because of what the FA are now publicly accepting was a poor decision. So in instances like this, can it not be argued that the referee is actually given a serious disadvantage to one team by making such a poor decision, which is then affecting the outcome of the game? You know, I know it's a mistake from the referee, but at the same time, it's the same as fixing a match, like, you know, in my eyes, because you've made a decision that has affected the outcome of a game. I don't think Sunderland would have lost 2-0. I think they were doing quite well at the time. How is that fair?
It's not fair, is it? That's the problem with it, isn't it? And the issue is that once it's happened, there's nothing you can do to overturn it. I think, like I said, something like a system where video referees are brought in is probably a better answer, where we can deal with the fallout of this immediately. Yeah. Having said that, there's obviously other criticisms about it. And what have you, but you can't keep going on like this. Really can't.
Yeah, well, ultimately, referees already wear earpieces, so, you know, I don't understand why they don't listen, you know, more, I guess, to the officials and to the fourth official, you know, because already it seems like from the sideline, you know, from the manager standing, which is, you know, the fourth official is usually in between the two dugouts, isn't he? You know, ultimately, if a manager can see that is clearly a bad decision, then surely the fourth official can as well. And why is he not telling, you know, the referee, you know, actually what happened? Sometimes the referee doesn't even see it. You know, his line of vision is blocked, or, you know, he turns away for a split second or whatever. But, yeah, there must be some kind of way to introduce video refereeing without it eliminating the role of the referee completely.
What if it wasn't like a video ref in the sense of, like, in rugby league and rugby union, you know? What if it was actually... there's a fifth official. He's sitting up in a room somewhere. Who the referee can literally just, when he, because you see him talking to those earpieces all the time. What if they just quickly talk into the earpiece? Do me a favour, quick check of that. Mm. What was it? Yeah, okay, made contact. All right, sending off. You know why? We don't make a big deal out of it. There's not this thing FIFA have an issue of, oh, it's going to slow the game down, yada yada. This is actually, you would spend just as much time talking to a fifth official who's got access to the cameras as he would. I think the people on the linesman.
I don't think they're slowing down things. An argument that holds any water, because, like you just said,
that's what Sepp Blatter said.
It takes seconds, doesn't it? I think most of it's down to referees not wanting to give up any of their authority. I think someone to say, "I make decisions. Decisions are mine." I remember, don't go and put up cameras afterwards. But
yeah, no accountability at all. It shouldn't be a referee, so to speak. It should be a referee team, shouldn't it? A team of officials. Make sure the result is what the result should be. So just literally sort of end that debate, because we could go on for ages. Pete, do you think bringing technology, would it really ruin the game like FIFA say, or would it actually make it better and more fair?
Enhance it. I just have to think of tennis, where they introduced a Hawkeye system for judging line calls, and not only does it end any argument stone dead as soon as it happens, it also builds up a bit of drama. So I can't see why that can't work to football as well.
I agree, you know, looking at rugby, you know, there's always that bit of excitement when we're waiting for ultimately the video ref to make the decision. And I think I don't quite want them to introduce the kind of drama, because I think it's kind of almost fake drama. It's flown up onto the big screen. It's all a bit cheesy, I think, but... I personally don't want that introduced into football. I, you know, as we kind of said, I would much rather it be barely seen, you know, into the ref's ear. Yeah, no, it was a, you know, sending off, you know, and the decision's made, done. And ultimately then that gets rid of Seth Blatter's argument that it will slow the game down.
We as an audience wouldn't know the video ref was consulted. But we know that the right decision will get made, and you can probably then assume they actually they are using the video ref.
Because they always get it wrong otherwise.
Goal of the week.
Navas. Less than a minute. His first Premiership goal of the season. And I know it ended up being somewhat of a trouncing, and he was kind of gifted it in some ways, but it was just a brilliant goal. It almost shouldn't have gone in, really, from the laws of physics, but it still did, so it was a brilliant goal.
It did look like it was going to curl out. I remember watching it, I thought, oh, you can hit the woodwork.
Yeah.
But that was a beautiful finish. And
well, I expect it to go across the face of the goal, you know, and Aguero tap it in or something, you know, but it didn't. It just went sailing in.
I go with Shane Long last night for West Brom. One of his two goals, we just had it go over his shoulder and then really wellied it in. So, yeah, West Brom a flying start.
Game of the week.
It's Tottenham versus Manchester United this weekend, and it wasn't initially going to be game of the week. I was leaning towards Chelsea against Southampton for that. But actually, I think the results on Sunday sort of meant this game probably has got the most depending on it this weekend, because Tottenham got trounced. I think it's a joint record defeat in the Premier League. Maybe they're worse than, I think, something like 16, 17 years or something, you know, battered. And obviously, United coming out of their game, and we'll talk about them in a minute. But I want to start with Tottenham. Where did they go wrong, Dan, against Man City, you know? Or did they go wrong, or were they just outplayed by what are a very incredible team at home in Man City?
I think it's a bit of both, but I think, you know, Laura's, you know, opening mistake kind of spelt trouble immediately for them. And we've been praising them defensively for the last few podcasts, and they didn't look like that side at all. It's as if they didn't really turn up. They're a side that is also known for performing well away from home, but they didn't look like they had any kind of intent or confidence about their game. And I think AVB made some really questionable decisions throughout the game. Sandro was sick at one point, and then, you know, I think he was responsible for the second goal and somehow managed to come out of the tunnel in the second half, you know, despite the fact that I think every other manager probably would have taken him off. And then to top it all off, Adebayor came on. Yeah. You know, it was just a bizarre game. And I think he's kind of going to take some kind of responsibility for that.
Pete, have yes. Tottenham gone backwards this season? Can they still get Champions League? I mean, they're currently ninth, but they haven't won any of the last three games. Actually, going off the last three games, they would be 19th in the table. I know they're only 2 points off a Champions League spot, but the teams above them are in good form, and Tottenham aren't, are they?
Yeah, it's still very tight up at the top, isn't it? Between anywhere from second down to about 13th or something, isn't it? But we need to reverse this loss of form quickly, because we are definitely sliding, aren't they, at the moment? Their attack hasn't scored for weeks now.
They haven't scored in three games. They've scored nine goals in 12 games, and they've spent $150 million or something.
It's ridiculous. None of their attacking signing seems to have settled in at all. And their defence only had a nightmare their last game against City, like Dan just said. So they're slowly falling apart a bit, aren't they?
You know, I think at the start of the season we were talking about, you know, who the hell was Negredo. And that, you know, Soldado was going to come in and, you know, having done brilliantly in La Liga, he was going to transform the Premier League, and he was going to score loads of goals. And you know, I think, you know, Pellegrini's probably sitting there now chuckling to himself. Not that I think it was his decision to bring Negredo in, but you kind of think, what would have happened, actually, if they'd swapped those two around? What if Negredo was at Tottenham and Soldado was at City?
Probably not much difference in that sense, in terms of how you do it with respective clubs, because I think part of Tottenham's problem is if Soldado doesn't fire, and he's not fired since the start of the season, and with no one else up front, because, I mean, Jermaine Defoe's no use in Ireland anymore, and, well, Adebayor it's a Dan Taylor punchline. So.
Well, I think Soldado's on, without the stats from me, I think he scored four goals. I think three of them have been penalties.
Yeah.
So he's only had one goal from open play. We chatted last week, actually, about how Tottenham, their formation isn't working for him right now. But, I mean, there's got to be a point where...
Does
Daniel Levy, and I think we're going to cover a little bit of this in our next segment, but let's talk briefly about it now. Is Daniel Levy going to be saying to AVB now that you need to change what you're doing?
AVB is responsible for some of this. I mean, he's made some very, very dodgy decisions of the way. I mean, like you said, that's the thing with Sandro, where it didn't take him off after he'd been sick. It's like, it reminds me of when Wallace had his injury a couple of weeks ago, and he kept on playing.
Yeah.
Those are dodgy decisions.
Well, he played for the full 90, and you've got Dembele sitting on the bench. You know, it's almost like for like, and I don't understand why he stayed on the field.
I think he has his specific ideas of what tactics to play and what substitutions to make at what time, and if there's an injury or something and it doesn't fit into his pre-arranged tactical plans, he just ignores it.
I'm going to put my hands up and say I'm going to be biased for this next the next part of this. And
as if we doubted otherwise.
Yeah, I think Man United were lucky to escape with a draw at Cardiff, Pete. And I will come on to what your opinion is in a minute, but I want to ask you, Dan, did Man United deserve a point from that game?
Depends which way you're looking at it. Had Rooney been sent off, then probably not. You know, he was probably their single best player on the pitch. But had he not been there, would they have got away with it? I don't know. Cardiff didn't play badly, but I still think Man United were the better side.
Insane. Go on then, Pete. Give me your thoughts.
I think personally Rooney should have been sent off. I'm going to come out there and say that now, because he did. He was shouted to play. He can't do that. He should have gone. But deciding how the match would have gone if it had been off is something you can't really judge. That's an imponderable. So I would say from the match as it was, I would say a draw is probably a fair result, because United were nowhere near the same as really a couple weeks previously against Arsenal. And Cardiff haven't been as good as they have been in other matches, but had enough fight to get something out of the game. So I think a draw was a fair result.
I agree kind of with that, I guess. You know, I think both sides deserve something out of the game. You know, Man United didn't quite turn up as much as, you know, we would have expected and Man United fans would have liked. And Cardiff definitely battled particularly well. And I did give a little cheer when they got that late equalising goal. But, you know, ultimately, a draw was a fair result.
From my perspective, they couldn't handle it once Craig Noon came on and he started running at them. And is this how Tottenham are going to beat Man United? Have they got to play Lennon and Townsend and just run United ragged?
Yeah, I think they've got to try and expose Man United's frailties at the back, but they've got to make sure that they don't repeat what they did against Man City. It is that they leave themselves wide open and that they don't make basic mistakes like clearing the ball. You know, like Lloris's kick was almost as bad as what Boric was doing for Southampton last weekend. You know, it was just ridiculous. I've said that word quite a number of times now, but they need to stay strong at the back, which we know they can do. Their record speaks for itself up until now. And yeah, I think they've got to use their energy and their pace they've got from people like Aaron Lennon and run them ragged a bit. But they've also got to watch out for Wayne Rooney. You know, that's Man United's biggest threat at the moment.
How do you see this game going?
3-0 Man United.
I'm also going for a United win. I'm going 2-0 because I think Tottenham will play very nicely into our hands.
We had a Twitter topic suggested to us by at Tom Howie. I don't know how he expects us to say his Twitter handle. He said, who's the next manager to be sacked? And he's going for Martignol or AVB. I'm going to ask you, Pete, who do you think the next manager is to go?
I still think Yol is still a little bit under the cosh, because Fulham are playing some abysmal football at times. So he's not completely out of the woods. I also think AVB needs to put his hooks up for the things we've discussed previously. And I'd also think Houghton probably is feeling it a little bit now.
I would say that Houghton's probably my number one target. And I think I actually predicted him to go first at the start of the season for some reason. But, his results haven't been as good as he was expecting. And actually, what we would usually expect from a Chris Houghton side, we've not seen from Norwich, you know, at all this season, really. And the other person, probably still Martignol. I think even with this, you know, appointment of a coach, surely that only opens his job up for this person to step into. You know, you've got a caretaker manager ready in the wings. So, you know, I don't think he's safe. I think they've got some difficult games coming up as well. And you never know, at Christmas, it could be going home.
Team of the week.
May have conceded 3 goals, but he also made 3 clinical saves and was pretty good throughout the match. So Mignolet is between the sticks. I'm not sure how I'm meant to pronounce his name, but as a Bikuta for Chelsea, I thought he had a really good game, and apparently he made the most tackles in that fixture. In the middle, well, this kind of really shows what we lacked defensively this weekend, the fact that I picked Williamson, Mike Williamson from Newcastle, who, you know, for all the criticism that I've given him over his career, has done really well this season. He's been a rock at the back for Newcastle and has continued his good form and our good form as well. And joining him is Koscielny at Arsenal. And for getting a goal and having a reasonably consistent performance out on the left is Patrice Evra.
Jesus Navas, the wing, who is devastating. Final show before he's capable of. He pretty much great go after just 20 seconds, as you mentioned earlier. In the centre mid, Lampard, who scored twice and was a bit old Lampard, wasn't he, for Chelsea? His partner in centre mid, Ross Barkley, who had an excellent game for Everton. He was basically Steven Gerrard in that match. And on the wing, one of your men, Dan, Yoann Gouffran. Up front, no surprise that Sergio Aguero, who's, for my money, perhaps the best striker in the world at the minute. And alongside him, Romelu Lukaku.
Other top games.
Let's talk Chelsea against Southampton. Quite a huge game. It's got a significant impact on the table. Dan, are Chelsea getting to where they need to be? Are they showing enough quality now?
Yeah, they're looking more fluid, certainly. And Oscar, I can't remember the interesting fact, but he's played over 100 games, I think, since the Olympics for both club and country. You know, he's been, you know, in that side pretty much consistently, well, for the last year. And he's been fantastic. And he proved it getting the other goal in that West Ham game. And Hazard is looking fantastic. And actually, they're keeping Mata completely out of the side. I think Mourinho came out and said that, you know, he would play Mata if he could play 12 or 13 players at a time, but he can't. And Chelsea have got so much quality in those positions that unfortunately it's keeping him out of the starting 11. But worryingly, if Lampard was your best player, then maybe the ones around him have got to do a little bit more.
What was Boric thinking with the Arsenal's first goal? His team were doing quite well at the time. And then he decided to think he thought he was Lionel Messi or something. he had like three or four opportunities to kick a ball away when Giroud was in on him. What was going through his mind? Actually, what the question is he now a liability when you consider the goal that he conceded against Stoke?
Well, I think the goal against Stoke was just a freak. I don't think that's anything to do with this, really. But that the goal against Arsenal was just madness. I wonder if it has been sort of implanted into him to be one of these sweeper keeper type goalies. He tries to, you know, dribble around oncoming attackers, and I don't know if he's entirely comfortable with that, because, you know, he made a right cock up of it, but it was a disaster. I don't like that style of play anyway. I think goalies shouldn't really just give it to the first available defender and let them have it.
Southampton, they didn't lose to Chelsea at all last season. They actually took 4 points off them, and they drew at Stamford Bridge. Can they repeat that on this visit? They're definitely a stronger team now, aren't they?
They're a stronger side, yeah. But it needs to be seen how they defeat to Arsenal will affect them. I think that's a big question, isn't it, really? Let's see how they bounce back. If you think they are in the shadow of gaining European play, they still need to train and, you know, pull themselves together and grab something out of this. Because, like I said, Chelsea aren't exactly flowing at full capacity at the moment, are they? So there's a chance for them. I don't think they will, but they could pull off something.
What would you put as your score prediction for the game?
I'm going 1-0 Chelsea.
I think I'm going to stick with my original prediction, which is Chelsea 2, Southampton 1.
I've gone 2-0 to Chelsea against Southampton. For anyone that cares about my opinion on this show.
No. Speed predictions.
Dan, we'll start with you this week with your predictions. Have you noticed I've made a concerted effort to come to you first, Dan, on a lot of things?
Why?
I noticed that I almost always go to Pete first. So I made a note in here, Stan first and everything.
But it gives me a chance to form an opinion on the question.
Villa against Sunderland.
Villa 2, Sunderland 1.
Everton against Stoke.
Everton 3, Stoke 1.
Norwich against Palace.
1-1.
West Ham United against Fulham.
West Ham United, is that it? Is that what they called that?
Are they? Yeah.
I don't know. I'm sure they're just called West Ham, aren't they?
West Ham United.
It's West Ham United.
No, never mind.
that's going in the podcast. We are now recruiting for a replacement member on the show. Made me second guess myself then.
A narrow 1-0 win to West Ham United.
It does sound wrong now.
I know, it does sound wrong, doesn't it? It just sounds a bit like Hull City Tigers. It sounds ridiculous.
When it was, when you went silent, I thought we were about to get the... When's that? Newcastle against West Brom.
Come on, Newcastle, 2-0.
Hull against Liverpool.
Liverpool 2, Hull 0.
Man City against Swansea.
I think we could see more goals here. City are at home, so I'm going to go for Man City 4, Swansea 2.
It's funny now, if you're predicting a Man City home score, you have to assume it's at least 4 goals.
Yes. Oh.
Pete?
Yes.
Aston Villa against Sunderland.
2-1 Villa.
Everton against Stoke.
What the hell was that?
I don't know. I tap on the mute button, hold on.
That was a genuine laugh. What are you laughing at?
I don't know.
Pete, Everton against Stoke.
1-0 Everton.
Norwich against Palace.
2-1 Norwich.
West Ham United versus Fulham.
1-0 West Ham.
Newcastle against West Brom.
2 apiece.
Hull against Liverpool.
3-0 Liverpool.
And Manchester City against Swansea.
3-0 City.
Fantasy football.
The fantasy football had the predicted change, made major changes that we anticipated in the top five. Stephen Turner, you can follow at StephenTurner14, is in first place still with 676 points. Just behind him is Carl Bungay on 654 points. So Carl's making his way towards the top again. If you want to follow Carl, you can follow him at Carl_Bungay. If you can spell that properly from my pronunciation.
I'm in third. I was in second, actually, but for some reason Carl came from nowhere and got a couple of points more than me, so I'm a bit gutted, really.
That rounds up our top three. The less said about me and Pete, the better.
I'm happy in seventh.
The final game I want to discuss with you gentlemen is one very close to my heart. It's Cardiff against Arsenal. It's just 3 o'clock kickoff this Saturday. It was a big point for Cardiff against Man United. Pete, what did you make of Cardiff generally?
Well, Cardiff have been at home all season. We've had a lot of heart and a lot of determination, and it's a tough combination to try and overcome, isn't it? So, overall, if you put up that every week, I think you should be safe. You're a hard side to break down at Cardiff City Stadium, at least.
Which is the harder game for Cardiff, Dan? Was it the Man United game? Or is it Arsenal?
The Man United game. Man United, obviously coming off the back of that Arsenal win, you know, that ultimately propelled them into, you know, a bit of confidence. Whereas the Arsenal, despite the fact that they're now coming off the back of a win, I think ultimately that Man United game was probably the harder of the two. Is that what I said originally? I can't remember.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. As I was talking, I was just like, is this making any sense to anybody?
I'm pretty sure Dan's biased. But... Now he's become a mute.
I got really itchy eyes.
I know, I think it's an itchy ass then. So brilliant. Just for everyone to hear. As our viewership, or whatever we call it, as listenership, is just.
I love my ass.
Pete, it was a.
Save up for a blooper meal.
Well, I talk out of it enough, so.
Pete, it was a huge win for Arsenal against Southampton, but only you predicted. They were actually going to win that game, and you got the right score as well. But they're 4 points clear now. Is this a crucial game for them, not just momentum, but for the league as a whole? Like, is this? I know it sounds stupid to say, but is this a must-win game for them when like Chelsea and Man City are starting to build up momentum?
Yeah, if they want to be serious at this championship challenge, they need to be looking at every single game and saying we need to win this, because the other teams are 4 points behind Liverpool, Chelsea, City 6 behind, but. In this season, that's nothing, really. The way this season has gone, so they need to approach this game wanting to, as confident as it can be, to win and get 3 more points.
Is this the kind of away game that Arsenal generally hate, Dan? Like, you know, this is, for me, I see it as very much, it's like when they go to Stoke or when they used to go to Bolton. You know, are they going to get that same kind of challenge at Cardiff? Can Cardiff upset them as a result, you know?
Well, ultimately, Cardiff City Stadium is a hard place to go. I think Wales, just in general, is a hard place for Premier League clubs to go at the moment. You know, Liberty is equally as difficult. And, you know, I definitely think it would be challenging for them. And I think Wenger's got to be careful the way he kind of lines up and doesn't try and, you know, go too defensively or go and get a goal and then just sit tight. Because, as, you know, Cardiff proved against Man United, they can come back. If required, even in the 91st minute of the game.
Let's get some predictions off you guys then. Dan, how are you seeing this game going?
I think Arsenal will use this to create a bit more momentum for themselves. So Arsenal 2, Cardiff 0.
And Pete?
Pretty similar, but I'm going to go 2-1 to Arsenal.
And this may surprise you all, but I've gone 2-1 to Cardiff. in a rare moment of support for my team.
I'm shocked.
Yes.
That's it for this week's show. You can follow us on Twitter again at @soccer_podcast, where we do chat regularly with our followers and we try to take suggestions for each show. If you want to get involved, either by talking to us on Twitter, suggesting things, or actually maybe you just want to be a guest on our panel for one show, please just do message us on Twitter now. For individual views, you can follow me at Kyle Thomas West. You can follow Dan at DTT240991. And Pete at Pete D. Gaskell. Thank you for listening, and I look forward to speaking to you all next week following an emphatic win for Cardiff against Arsenal. Fingers crossed, eh?
The Beautiful Game, a podcast from the Compass Network.